Yeah, my family gets mad when I say, oh, 14 more days of summer, 9 more days, because I'm counting down, of course, to the start of the semester. But they're like, no, it doesn't end until September 20 or something.
So
I'm like,
everybody listening on WHFR, don't tell my wife I said this, but she goes into squirrel mode, basically, when we get to mid-August, trying to get everything done, get all those nuts packed away before the next school year begins.
Yeah, as she should. And that's what educators do, I guess. But we know that we have packed as much into this summer as we have been able to possibly at WHFR and at HFC. Actually, there's been a lot going on campus, mostly work related, infrastructure things and building changes and updates and new cement and so on. So if you haven't been to the campus in a while, it looks pretty darn good. I would venture to say almost better than ever. So that's a good thing. And it's amazing, Alan, how many students that I have, and I'm wrapping up a summer class literally this week, how many students that when I polled them, they said they've never been to our campus. And it's like, you're a college student, you've never been to the campus. And that is, of course, we know a product of the times.
Correct.
But we're working to change that ever so slowly, as it may need to be. And our interview today is going to really speak to that. Some reasons, additional reasons beyond all the traditional ones that we've had to come back to Henry Ford College here in Dearborn. Now, for the longest time, we have been working with our fine arts and our music and theater and telecom areas, sort of, I don't want to say in a holding pattern because we've been doing everything we can, but it's been lean, to say the least. And we, in theater in particular, where we're sort of heading this discussion, we have been working in that capacity with only a part-time staff and part-time faculty, as wonderful as they are. It's just certainly not the way to grow a program or even to, to sort of rejuvenate with what we're hoping to do with our student base. So I am so excited that not only in the telecom area where we were able to hire a full-time faculty member, another one, which is great, but in theater, we now have an official theater director who is full-time and committed to really, really just sort of resurrecting where we've been and making it bigger and better than ever. And well, he just happens to be our special guest today. So I'm really excited to welcome to our WHFR airwaves to the very first time, Dr. John Michael Saffell. And Dr. Saffell, your reputation precedes you with the wonderful article that was on our HFC website just this past week. So we're going to reference that. Check out hfcc.edu, everybody, for tons of information about this gentleman that we are so excited to have at the college. But we're going to ask you some other things, kind of chat between the lines a little bit. So welcome to Henry Ford College. But even more especially, welcome to WHFR.
Well, thank you both so very, very much for having me here. I am counting down the days, but with just nothing but excitement. I really can't wait to jump in and just start really meeting my new HFC family, students, faculty, staff, absolutely everybody. I'm chomping at the bit. So thank you so much for having me here.
So, Dr. Saffell, I'll ask probably the easiest question I get to ask all day. Why? Why?
Okay, so there's sort of, I think, two answers to that, right? The first thing is, okay, what sort of setting do I want to teach in? And then where exemplifies that? So first, just this sort of idea of two-year colleges and community colleges and colleges that are there to really serve the greater good. When I finished off my PhD, I looked around the country with specifically that goal in mind. I am a community college graduate myself, Northern Essex Community College in Haverhill, Massachusetts. And after graduating from that, I left there knowing that that's what I wanted to do, to lead a program at the two-year level. And I went and I've taught at several schools since while getting my MFA and then my PhD. But in between that, when I did have a break to be teaching purely as a teacher, not, coexisting as a student, I was able to run the theater department at Cowley County Community College down in Kansas, and absolutely loved the experience of teaching at that school. Though Kansas was an experience, and it was eager sort of to keep looking around. And then again, the PhD. And then here, I have taught at research one universities. I've taught here and there. I've taught where I watch students drive up in nicer cars than the top administration. All these sorts of things. But for me, that idea of a college that exists to make sure that anyone that has the drive and the passion to explore and to better their lives and everything, that it's there for them, means everything to me. Back when I was at North Essex Community College, the Latin motto of the college was Tamen plus Lux, or light in spite of. And this idea that every single student at any college, I would argue, at any university, comes in with some in spite of, some challenge, something that they are seeking to improve upon, whatever that happens to be, whether it's economics or language or on and on and on, age, et cetera, disability. But I've always felt like community colleges were the colleges that recognized that and cared about it and didn't treat students as, well, ignore that, you're here, get your stuff done, but said, okay, what are you looking for and how can we help you get there? And that, to me, is the greatest mission that a college or a teacher could possibly have. So with that sort of long-winded, why do I believe in community colleges above all else? why Henry Ford? I was lucky enough to be in a situation to look around the country and really looked at quite a few schools and spoke to quite a few schools. But from the very first time I looked at the Henry Ford website, I knew something special was going on. From the time that I signed on, and not only were there sort of banners and informationals everywhere about how everyone is welcome, but I also saw pages and pages of information of how to make sure that the cost was as little as possible. I saw an ad where they were helping students through the JCPenney program for suits to go out for interviews and things. Just this idea of a college that recognized it wasn't there to sort of push a bunch of knowledge into students' heads, and if they succeeded or not, well, whatever. It was a college that was there to be this so vital stepping stone in a student's life, and to do that in a holistic way where we care about every student. That was the marketing of the college. And then I interviewed and found with every person I spoke to through every one of my interviews that that was the vibe, for lack of a better word. That was the feeling I got from every person I spoke to, and just fell in love. After looking around the country, without question, I'm thrilled to be coming here to Dearborn.
Woohoo! You so eloquent. You picked up on something that it takes others a while to figure out, and you did it even before you had the job. So thank you for noticing. speaking for myself, of course, and I'm sure Alan, that's why we're here. It really, truly, truly is why we're here. And we're glad you were a part of it. You have a lot of T's to cross, I's to dot, and so on and so forth on the sort of the classroom side of things. But you also have the exciting, some might say daunting, challenge of filling a theater as well, literally. Yes. Of four productions, both the on stage and in the audience. So what is your philosophy kind of moving in here? You're now an official resident of Michigan, so you're one of us now. You're here now.
We're gonna let that Ohio State thing slide just bit.
I keep pointing out to people I wasn't born in Ohio. I didn't grow up with I happen to be employed by Ohio State.
Means to an end, right? Yeah.
Yes. I moved away. So if anything, you're welcome, Michigan.
But so how do you prioritize? How do you figure out sort of where to begin so that you can use the 24 hours in a day, like all of us only have, to make the most impact and do it in a way that you're building on successes and not biting off more than you can chew?
Sure. I think it's by constantly reminding myself that it's not a binary, that it's not the classes and the production season. And I've seen schools that treat it that way, and it's never to anyone's benefit. This idea that what we are doing in the classroom and what we are doing in rehearsals and in studio classes and in everything else, all is part of the larger educational process, or certainly are, you know, any theater students and any students in any major who come take theater classes, but even for the audience and for the community, what are the big lessons we're trying to impart? And so, by not treating it as these sort of two different things, but as a single idea, it really doesn't become that different than when you as a teacher try to think about the whole year. Okay, I have, you know, I have 1,000 different assignments to juggle here, but how does it all fit into this one organic, holistic sort of unit? And really, as long as I treat it like that, I've always found that it works well, both for the balance for my workload, but also in terms of giving the students something that's digestible, connected, interconnected, and in the end, I hope extremely positive and fun.
Well, we know what things have been like here, certainly for the past few years, but, you know, working in theater, you know, what's your approach as we sort of come back to... I never know if I can say we're ever really back in terms of having people and COVID protocols and stuff like that.
Yeah, we're creating a new back. Yes,
exactly. So what's your approach? And we'll get into, you know, the specifics of the upcoming season. But, you know, what are you looking for? And I guess, number one, what it means for the audience, but more what you think it means for the students.
Yes. Okay.
Who have been deprived of, you know, that audience in front of them over the past few years.
So one of the, I think, both most challenging, but also most enjoyable parts of this process of preparing so far has been trying to figure out a way to build a season that works for not only all the needs of the college and the students, but also this gigantic bucket of unknowns that we have. And so as a director, as an artistic director and season planner, I always want to bring in shows that that will work sort of no matter who walks in the door. I love plays where people don't have to look a certain way, have been born a certain way, etc. I want my plays, whenever possible, which is 95% of the time, to be open, whatever body type, whatever disability, whatever whatever racial ethnicity or whatever, on and on and on, the entire gender spectrum, etc. Everyone should be welcome to come in and, you know, play a character. So part of it is always that. How can I do something that will meet any need that walks through the door? But the other part of it was usually an existing program has a good sense of roughly how many students are going to want to be involved. And they can sort of peg at, okay, so I need shows of X number of roles and then they get from there. There's no guessing for this semester. On one hand, after so long and quiet, there's a lot of fears that, well, maybe we'll only have a few people show up at auditions. Or after this time and people begging for sort of experiential events and things, something to do, something that doesn't involve being cocooned in your house, maybe we'll be overrun by people. I've already taken a couple of steps to make auditions available to more people. We're expanding our base for that. So I needed to come up with a season that not only was flexible in the type of people, but also in the number of people, whether we had only a couple of people show up or we were crowded, so that no matter what, we could embrace that and run with it and have a great semester. So it's a fascinating year to try to plan for, but we're doing it.
Well, the word plan and they really don't so much go hand in hand. And when we know that, even trying to plan schedules for classes for, you know, in 2 months, let alone you know, the full season, but that is the way, the nature of the business, if you will. And I appreciate your smile and your giggles, because that means that you've got the right attitude on this. You're looking at it as an opportunity more than even a challenge, but that's great. Support is certainly important. I appreciate the fact that we've already made some really nice connections with some of our other areas at the college, and you as director of theater. But support for the community, you know, in the community as well, I think is critical. This is college theater, but it isn't so much also really community theater. Speak to that a little bit. Do you have an approach to how you're going to balance all of that? And you also use the term incorporating a variety of, or anybody inclusively that wants to be involved. I know you've got a personal connection to welcoming people with disabilities and working through any challenges that might be, you know, facing a potential theater participant, student, etc. Would you speak to that just a little bit, that sense of community, and then also truly your sense of inclusivity?
Sure. My hesitation here is, okay, so you've asked a question I could speak about for 3 hours. Let me figure out how to speak about it in 3 minutes.
That's all right. I can always edit it.
Okay. Yeah. let me begin by speaking to that sense of for the community, right? And that idea of community theater. First, I want to just quickly address, just because I don't want anyone to get an incorrect idea here. There is theater that we create for the community, and then there is community theater, which has a specific meaning there, right? Which is an amateur group that anyone sort of from the community can come be part of. I do just want to make really clear, at least in the rules as I'm inheriting them right now, participation actually on stage and in the show is limited to currently enrolled college students. So just to clarify. But anyway, but moving on. Yes. Our audience, who absolutely are taking part in the show, should be based on our community. It should be this idea that if the audience makes up half of what we're doing, if they are the ones really providing the magic for the sort of make-believe that we're putting on the stage, then it should probably reflect them. And it should probably, in some way, be a product of the place and the community where it's being created. And of course, that was another sort of challenge as I was planning on this, because I was going, okay, let me think about a season that works for Dearborn, a place that I haven't actually stepped in yet. And so that was interesting. It'll be much easier, I hope, in the years to come. Part of what that meant is certainly making sure that whomever comes and auditions from the community is welcome on stage. And that includes, I know that sometimes people who wear certain cultural and religious garments, for example, whether it's a hijab or what have you, there are unfortunately theaters that may make them feel unwelcome in that, well, if you want to play that character wouldn't wear that, or that character wouldn't have that, what they see as a restriction, etc. And that's, I want to say it's absurd, but it's worse than absurd. It's offensive. This idea that if you come, we're going to make the character work for you, whomever you are, and whatever wonderful qualities, not restrictions, qualities that you bring to it, we can find those qualities in the characters as well. So that's part of it. Being in Dearborn with a wonderfully rich Arab American sort of demographic base, might have you leaning into recognizing, okay, how can we make sure that we're being as inclusive as possible in that sense? Not only inclusive, having, you know, everybody in the community come in and really own the program. But the other part of it is, I looked over all of our seasons and I couldn't find any plays. I may have missed some, so I apologize if I did. I couldn't find any plays actually written by Arab Americans or on Arab American themes. And for anywhere, but in Dearborn of all places, that seemed surprising. And so starting this year, I'm implementing a rule, a bare minimum of one play per season. Written by someone who identifies as an Arab American and has Arab American concerns And I say American as it's a single thing. Real, no, it's a vast, diverse sort of idea, but it's one that, in contemporary American theater is not getting anywhere near enough representation as it deserves. And if any school is going to get it right, it feels like we probably should. So there's a lot of that going on. And a lot of that comes from, to quickly segue to the other part of your question, comes from the work that I've done over the years with different disability theater programs and productions and things. And this idea that you don't start out with a script and cast it in your mind and find the people that perfectly fit your vision. You go and you gather a group of people and figure out how do you people bring your own uniqueness and wonderfulness into this production. Just because that character has never had MS before, is there a multiple sclerosis before? Is there any reason that they can't in the script? Well, if not, then great. Why don't we have you play it? No different than, well, that character's always been blonde. Well, do they have to be? And really just sort of recognizing that the uniqueness of each individual actor that we're seeing on that stage, those people who are the community, who represent the community, by allowing them to be, it sounds counterintuitive, but to allow them to be themselves while playing these characters really makes it a product of the community far more than something that we're trying to impose upon it.
So let's get into the season. I understand you're finally able to let us know what's on offer, and then we can get into the details of tryouts, rehearsals, all that kind of stuff. Where has that vision led you? And I understand this is probably like a first stab at it. And
next year
we can talk about how it's evolved.
So it's been in a couple of interviews I've given recently, I've had to be all over with secrets just because we were still taking care of legalities. So this is the official first public announcement. So yay, scoop. we have a total of 4 plays this season that are being split over 3 different production dates. The first one, the fall show, is called The Passage. That's by Robert Lawson. And we can certainly chat more about it, but I will say not only is it one of my favorite plays ever, but I also adored the fact that the script calls for between 8 and 32 actors, and each of them have featured moments. It isn't sort of just a big crowd at the back. Like, it's every character has these wonderful featured moments. It's just how much doubling do you do to make it happen? So love that. And that will go up the first week of December, which is a little later than we normally do our fall show. Chosen one just to make sure we had the time and, you know, as I sort of got my feet wet. But also it just happens to fall a little over a week before finals. And just for any students listening, I am going to be doing my best to get as many teachers on campus to offer you extra credit for coming to see it as possible. So I figure right before finals is a really good time for some panicking students to get a little
sign me up. I might know a couple of budding journalists that might want to interview you or some of the students in the production. So
love it. We'll take it all. Then, as we go into the winter semester, I have 2 plays that will be opening at the same time, whereas The Passage was will be in the Adrae Auditorium. These 2 plays will be performed in the Black Box Theater, which, if anyone's not familiar with that, that's room 161 in F Building. And those 2 plays will be 5 a.m. Pancakes by Alexa Juanita Jordan and Tenderly by Ida Ismaili. And that second one, Tenderly, is actually currently at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, where the playwright herself is starring in it and getting just absolute rave reviews. So I'm so excited to bring that story of an Iranian, a student from Iran on a student visa here in America, and her story. And the complications that sort of come out around being of that age and around having student visa and international politics and everything else when people are just trying to live their lives. So again, that's mid-January. And then our final show of the year will be in mid-April, and that's She Kills Monsters by Qui Gwen. which very, very popular show right now at both the high school and the college level. I wanted to do it for years. I'm so excited to be able to bring that one. And that will be back in the Avery Auditorium, but with seating set up on the actual stage to form a sort of different black boxy sort of experience. And of those plays, I will be directing the first and second one. When we get to She Kills Monsters, I'm going to be co-directing that. Anyone who's familiar with our program will know Chris Bremer, the awesome Chris. Chris will be, we decided, because that show has sort of a very realistic half and an extremely fantastic and fanciful half, he will be doing the realistic stuff, and I will be doing the crazy puppet stage combat, everything else half, so that it really does create this sense of two very different worlds that the audience is experiencing.
He has been a guest on our program previously. Mm-hmm. What's it been like getting to know him and work with him?
Yeah, Chris is a delight. The planning that we're doing right now already, toward things like, you know, the theater, the student club for the students to make sure that they really have a governing voice and what have you, and planning the season and, just looking toward all the ways that we can capture what's been wonderful about the history of this program while also building in new and creative ways. It's just been an absolutely welcoming and wonderful partnership so far. I couldn't have asked for better. And the way we are really trying to approach this with the students is very much one of, okay, there's Chris and there's John, and we won't always agree on everything, and that's the strength of our program, because we disagree but respect, and, you know, and to really encourage students to see theater as the collaborative process that it is.
That's tremendous. There are so many things that are learned outside of the lines, outside mm-hmm. of the acting part of this, when one participates in a performance of this nature. And it sounds like you're very, very aware and very in tune with trying to teach those lessons as well as get somebody stepping into a role, and we're so grateful for that.
If I may just come out on that quickly, I'm sorry. Yeah, that's one of the things that I really hope to impart, that I know that there are people out there who enjoy acting, who enjoy singing, and who enjoy dancing, and of course I want them to come and be involved and audition and what have you. But when you look at a Broadway show, the average is something like there's four people off stage for every person on stage making that show come together, right? So if you are at Henry Ford College and you are at all interest in project management or business administration, have I got some stage manager positions that you can learn a ton from? If you're at all interested in electrics, I mean, lighting is such a cool thing to work on, whether it's carpentry, whether it's fashion, or if you're into cosplay or any of these sorts of things, we want you. We want you to come be part of this and have a great time and build some, you know, resume usable credits and get some real world experience while having a great time in a fun, social, everything else sort of atmosphere. So thank you for allowing me to slide that pitch in, but all are welcome, even if you can never imagine yourself stepping onto a stage.
Absolutely. Dr. John Michael Seffel is joining us today on the WHFR Journal. He is our new director of theater at Henry Ford College. We did get the scoop. Yes, Alan, air high five. We got another one. Woohoo! So the official season has been launched into the airwaves, and our expectation is at WHFR. Anyway, we don't want everybody to have to remember all of that, because we will absolutely bring you and members of the crew and the team certainly back again before the December production, before the December performance. It's part of that collaboration that we believe so strongly in as well. So we're happy that you do. And you mentioned one thing that I want to kind of piggyback on, and it kind of slipped through, but I think it certainly bears a little bit more detail, talking about getting the students involved in decision making. You know, you could have come in and this is my agenda and this is what I'm doing, but it really sounds like you're really flipping this like from the inside out. And what a wonderful, wonderful leap of faith you're taking, and a wonderful testament, I think, to your confidence in what our current and potential future student body has to offer in this area. So tell us a little bit more. I know you mentioned a club or a team that's going to sort of help create what we will ultimately be seeing on some stage and some stage capacity in HFC theater.
Sure. I'm definitely of the belief that once you get above 35-ish, if you don't have at least one mentor who is younger than you, right? Not your mentee, a mentor, someone that's really connecting you to what everything that's still happening, you're losing. So, and moving here, it's like, oh no, I lost all my mentors. So, selfishly, I'm going to create some new ones. But this idea of starting it out, and I'll quickly put in this pitch that on September 1st at 5 p.m. At the ADRE in Building F, we're going to be holding a first informational meeting for this theater club, yet to be named by the students that get together and form it. But this idea that there is a strong presence there that not only help us set the rules, what are our goals? I know what my goals are. But that's only me. What are our goals as we build this department? What do we think are the vital things that should be going on our stage? What are the things that they feel like they need to learn to be able to go and either apply this to whatever non-theater major, or if they want to go on and pursue an actual performance career, how do we go ahead and make sure that they're getting everything that they need from internships to everything else, right? To go back to that idea of Henry Ford working with JCPenney for that suit drive. That's absolutely part of what the theater program needs to be doing. What do you actually need as you head out? And how can we make sure that we're doing everything we can in our power to help you?
I'm going to put my cynical hat on for a second.
Sure.
Why life theater? Right. You know, I mean, if you want to be a star, you can go on TikTok. You mentioned, costume stuff. There's all sorts of cosplay opportunities. Take yourself.
You are singing my song, my friend. OK, yes.
Why life theater?
So it's funny.
My second why question for the day. But
yeah. let me say this. I have certainly worked in film and TV, and I don't need to drop names. If anyone's really curious, I can go IMDb, that sort of nonsense. But it was always because somebody called me up and asked me for a favor. I love watching film. I love watching TV. But the communal experience, I adore listening to radio, but the communal live experience of being in this room and shaping something together with this audience is just an art form in and of itself that I adore so much. I want to quickly say, as people get used to sort of the shows I get really excited about, they do tend to be the more theatrical. During the 20th century, American theater, and I put it that way because a lot of theaters around the world didn't, but American theater got very interested in being as realistic as it possibly could be. And happily, professional American theater started to move away from that. Started a little bit in the 60s, but really nowadays they're starting to move away from that. And I'm all for that. I used to have a dear, dear friend in film, and he came and watched one of my plays. And he said, okay, I finally get it. People come and watch my stuff because they want me to lie to them really well. Film is all about lying to people in a way that just takes your breath away. But people come to your stuff because they want to dream with you. They want to buy into the dream. And that idea of being a successful liar or being a successful dream sharer, to me, explains the love I have for this. So there you go. TikTok's awesome. And I hope we get a great theater TikTok running. But that is not the same thing as that moment of excitement, just as the lights come up for the first time on a performance.
Yeah, John, I'm gonna flip gears from Alan's why, relating to the last question he asked, and I'm gonna be the devil's advocate for those people that like, yeah, no, I don't think so. Theater, no. I saw Annie when I was 12, and I'm good. I'm good forever. Speak to that just for a moment, if you would. And sure. I know that's another show, but give us a nugget.
Yeah, you just described me for a long time. I thought I hated theater because, no disrespect to Annie or anyone that loves it, and over time I've come to appreciate it, but it's not going to be a play I direct anytime soon. Once I learned that theater wasn't a genre, once I realized that theater is an art form, that you can turn it into anything you want it to be, then I got it. And once I started looking around the world and at how different cultures do it, how just different people perform street theater and on, just this idea that if you didn't like a single painting, that you would swear off all of art. Or if you didn't like a single song, you would swear off all of music. Those things would be absurd. And yet in America, we have, I don't mean to keep downing America. Sorry, go USA. but we have had this thing culturally that we make sure that everyone, that we're pushing Sound of Music and Grease and Annie on the TV and saying that's representative theater. Well, sure, that was representative theater in the 1940s through the 60s, and specifically Hollywood's rendition of theater in the 1940s to 1960s. But in what other art form are we asking people to judge the entire art based on those few products from now 80 years ago? You know, there is so much exciting and vital theater being made every single day by people all over our community and all over the world. And just getting to know 10% of it will, 1% of it will enrich your life so, so much. You will find your story being told in theater.
Now, I'm sure you've thought about this. Then what is that step of getting, certainly here at HFC, those 18 or 19 years old who've been raised on... Sure. Watching Grease on TV or Annie, those kinds of things.
Or avoiding them.
to go along with you on that trip, on that journey, and see what they can create.
Yeah. So great, great, great question. So the first thing is that theater appreciation is my favorite class in the history of mankind, because every time I teach it, at least half and often more are there going, I don't know, I saw a play in high school once and it was boring. This sounded easier than math, so I'm here. and that by the end of that semester, how much that class has turned around and how much that class sees theatricality, whether it's in a play or not, just basic theatricality as part of their everyday lives, as part of how politics works, how they go about in sales and in marketing and anything in theme parks, that theatricality is is absolutely as basic and fundamental to our lives as whistling a tune is music, or as the graphic design of a microwave dinner is part of art. Right. And once they start to understand that and they start applying it in ways that excites them, and helps them in their path, even if they never actually go attend a play, they're successful and I'm thrilled and high fives all around because we've stood up for theater. But if they can also start to recognize that, oh, these skills and what have you, we can get them and understand them through theater. And if we can start to have them step in and see that the same contemporary voices that are creating the favorite shows on Netflix are also writing these amazing plays. Half the things they see on Netflix are based on plays. You know, and they can come in and experience some of these things and see that, just like I did when I thought I hated all theater, and then right in a row, I saw Sweeney Todd by Stephen Sondheim and then had an opportunity to audition for One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest. And I was like, okay, never mind. I get it now. I love it. Just that idea of helping students see that theater can absolutely belong to them and speak to them in ways that excite them. And hey, we'll win them, and I'll be thrilled to have them, and hopefully they'll be thrilled to be there.
There are plays like Hamilton in the recent past that we can look at and say, you started to tip the tide a little bit because it was more relatable to a younger audience, and you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda has that golden touch and so on. And I feel like this is a bit of a wave that we are sort of in the middle of, and I'm thrilled that you recognize that and want to continue to, you know, keep it going and expand it. The plays that you mentioned for our season, the four that are coming up for the upcoming season, I'm pretty sure you would have mentioned if you had a pen in hand for any of those, and I don't think you have, but you also write, I understand. Might we have the pleasure of seeing something by Dr. John?
So not this year, certainly. I will say there's one I spoke about in during my interview, and Steve, chair of Fine Performing Arts, got excited and sort of let me know that he expects to see it at some point. So that is an adaptation of an old H. Levick, originally Yiddish language play, but it translates perfectly to our current moment, and it's one I'm working for. I'm hoping for next season. But it is a play about a bunch of people who work together in a factory. And that factory is dealing with questions about whether to unionize and strike or not, but it's also dealing with being a community primarily of immigrants or first generation. And that is not a monolith, that there are all these different people in there who the rest of society sort of grouped together as a single culture. But in that room, the levels of assimilation and the levels of just different dialects and everything else that's going on there, that we have this extremely diverse and exciting sort of microcosm of people. And the frictions that are there, and the frictions come outside while they're trying to deal with these questions of unionization, while they're trying to deal with some questions of mental health, on and on. It just feels like something that is happening right now. And so to just slightly tweak it and make it happening in 2023, and it's amazing how I think relatable and emotional and funny and lovely it will be. So fingers are crossed. But yes, I have written some throughout my career. I have had a couple things in New York. I have had a couple things here and there. But as I've said before, if I get to keep writing, that would be swell, and I really enjoy it. I like editing books and things. And if I don't get to, that'd be okay too. But teaching, if I didn't get to teach anymore, that would just be devastating. So I write when I really want to direct something and I can't find anyone else that's written it yet. Otherwise, I'm happy to really just be written.
All right. So let's circle back and sure. Go back to the upcoming season. And primarily, here in, mid August, what's the next thing around the corner? Well, I know we've already talked about it, but in terms of rehearsals and getting in touch with you what you're expecting that first day in the classroom as you start to put something together here for the fall season.
Okay, so first, I beg people to remember the following two dates, and you're going to start seeing them on posters and social media and whatever else. But the two dates are September 1st at 5 p.m. in the Audrey. I mentioned that before. This is specifically the theater club sort of first informational meeting.
The week before Labor Day. Yeah, correct.
Exactly.
Yeah, just making sure. Yep.
And then 1 week later, Thursday the 8th, will be auditions for three shows. So that's for The Passage, but also for 5 a.m. Pancakes and Tenderly. Passage will open in the fall semester. And so that'll be a normal rehearsal process, which is usually two rehearsals a week through most of the semester. 5 a.m. Pancakes and Tenderly will both be handled probably one rehearsal a week throughout the fall semester. 5 a.m. Pancakes, because it's shorter, will probably even start maybe halfway through the semester. And then once we get back from break, back for the winter semester, there'll be just a couple weeks to polish it up. So that's why we're auditioning for all three plays right as soon as we get back, basically, on Thursday, September 8th, again in the Audrey. That'll start at 6 p.m. She Kills Monsters, we'll go ahead and audition for once we get to the winter semester. So beyond those two dates, though, anyone, I will have audition breakdowns. That will be going outside of my office, which is 125 in Building F. So students can come and check it out. And, well, what am I even auditioning for? These are not any, so I recognize that not everyone may be familiar with the titles. So having that information available to them. But the biggest thing you can do, if you have any questions whatsoever about classes, about these plays, about auditioning, anything, is to just go ahead and email me. My email address, which I'm hoping we can put up later or what have you, but is my first initial J, last name Sefel, S-E, F as in Frank, E-L, at hfcc.edu, right? That's our email thing? Yes. Okay. anyone just reaching out, I've already been able to connect with a lot of students. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your concerns and what I can do to make sure that this transition into the new semester and this great new theater year goes as well for you as possible.
Thank you so much for your time and your insight and your passion and commitment to what I am sure is going to be a very exciting season here at Henry Ford College. Congratulations on your position as the new director of theater at HFC. John Michael, and thank you again for your candor today. We look forward to hearing more from you and more about upcoming events so we can continue to share them with our listeners as well.
Thank you both so, so much.
So nice to meet you here today on the WHFR Journal. We look forward to doing it in person sometime in the future as well. And I'm sure as we get closer to some of those productions, we'll probably have you back to poke in a word or two as well. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek along with Susan McGraw. We will be back with more wrapping up today's program. Don't forget Kitty Love coming up at 2 o'clock for a trip down Highway 61. Some blues for your Friday afternoon here on WHFR, Making Waves.
Henry Ford College in Dearborn, Michigan is a comprehensive public college serving about 18,000 students each year in Southeast Michigan. HFC is dedicated to preparing students for the rapidly changing workplace in today's world by offering more than 100 associate degree and university transfer programs. HFC also specializes in customized workforce development training for business and industry. Since its founding in 1938, HFC has been the gateway to higher education for thousands of students who seek an affordable, high-quality post-secondary education. To learn more about what HFC has to offer, please visit us at www.hfcc.edu or you can call the campus office at 1-800-585-HFCC. Your future begins now, and it begins right here at Henry Ford College.
Welcome back. This is the WHFR Journal. I'm Alan Mazurek with you until the top of the hour here on WHFR. Highway 61, some blues for your Friday afternoon comes your way at that time. Well, let's see. We're going to round out our program today. There's a couple things to talk about here. First off, just so you know, as we have referred to several times, enrollment is currently going on for the fall semester here at Henry Ford College. Classes begin next week. Thursday, I believe, is the official first day of the semester on the 25th of August. And interesting thing that they're doing, and this is really cool for those interested in enrollment and how to become enrolled in Henry Ford College and register for classes. Drop-in Zoom sessions are available basically every Monday through Thursday from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Enrollment Services is holding Zoom sessions for students. Runs all the way till September 1st, Thursday, September 1st from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. And all you can sign up ahead of time or simply drop into the Zoom sessions. There is a meeting ID and a passcode. And, of course, it is just open for anybody who has questions about registering for classes or becoming enrolled in an institution or various programs. Things like that. So if you have some questions, that's a great way to check them out. Or you can also contact Enrollment Services at enrollmentservices@hfcc.edu or call them at 313-845-9600. And of course, lots of information about the fall semester, classes that are available, how to register, et cetera, available on the college's website, hfcc.edu. We hope to see you here on the campus of Henry Ford College. All right, we're going to wrap up our program today, and we're going to think good thoughts. Let's think good thoughts, all right? And listen to a TED Talk, as we occasionally do here on the WHFR Journal. And this one comes to us from Catherine Price, and she believes that far from being frivolous, fun is a critical component of a fulfilling and healthy life, and she has a plan for how we can have more of it. Why having fun is the secret to a healthier life. Today's TED Talk for you here on the WHFR Journal.
You know what's a lot harder than it seems like it should be? Actually feeling alive. And what I mean by that is that we are all constantly doing, or at least we're constantly scrolling, but we're not necessarily living. You know, we keep ourselves busy to the point of exhaustion, but we're also languishing. We feel a little bit dead inside. And I think we know that on some level. I think that's part of the reason we keep ourselves so busy and distracted to begin with, but we don't know what to do about it. So I am here to tell you, I figured out what to do about it. We need to have more fun. So you might think that you're already having plenty of fun. And that's because in our everyday speech, we often use the word fun to describe anything we do with our leisure time, even if it's not actually enjoyable and, in fact, a waste of time. So for example, we scroll through social media for fun, even though doing so often makes us feel bad about, like, kind of everything. Or we'll say, that was so fun, we should do that again soon. In response to things that weren't that fun and that we don't want to do again, ever. But it's not really our fault that we're a little bit sloppy about how we use the word fun, because even the dictionary doesn't get it quite right. You know, it says that fun is an amusement or enjoyment or lighthearted pleasure. It's something for kids to have in play areas. It makes it sound like it's frivolous and optional. But if you think back on your own memories that stand out to you as having truly been fun, and I really encourage you to do this, you know, the memories that you would describe as, and forgive me for our scientific terminology, so fun, you're going to notice that there's something much deeper going on. I've collected thousands of these stories from people all around the world, and I can tell you it's amazing, because when people recount the memories in which they had the most fun, they tell you about some of the most joyful and treasured memories of their lives. So in reality, fun is not just lighthearted pleasure. It's not just for kids, and it is definitely not frivolous. Instead, fun is the secret to feeling alive. So today, I want to propose to you a new, more precise definition of what fun is. I want to reveal some of the ways in which it is astonishingly good for us. And I want to give you all some suggestions for things you can do, starting right now, to experience its power for yourself. So the first thing we need to start with is the fact that fun is a feeling and it's not an activity. And that's important because a lot of times when I ask people what's fun, they'll respond with a list of activities that they enjoy. You know, they'll say dancing is fun or skiing is fun or, I don't know, pickleball is fun. Everyone seems to think that pickleball is fun. And sure, pickleball can be fun, but we've all had experiences where something's off and an activity that seems like it would be fun doesn't end up feeling fun. And then on the flip side, we've had experiences where something that doesn't seem like it would be fun at all ends up feeling ridiculously fun. There's an element of serendipity. But when people do have fun, when they experience this feeling, it's actually very easy to recognize, because people who are having fun look like they're being illuminated from within. So, for example, here's me and my husband having fun together. Here are some presidents having fun together. Here's Archbishop Desmond Tutu and the Dalai Lama having fun together. Actually, those two seem like they were very often even constantly having fun together. And as you can see in these photographs, true fun produces this visceral sense of lightness and joy. It's radiant. In fact, when I asked my daughter when she was about 5 years old what color fun would be, she said sunshine. So what is this sunshine? You know, what is this feeling that we call fun? Well, when people tell me their stories about fun, it's really interesting because the details are all different and often quite mundane, but the energy running through them is the same. And there are three factors that are consistently present to the point that I believe they constitute a new definition, one that is a lot more accurate than what's in the dictionary. And those three factors are playfulness, connection, and flow. So by playfulness, I do not mean you have to play games or, God forbid, make believe. I just mean having a lighthearted attitude of doing things for the sake of doing them and not caring too much about the outcome, letting go of perfectionism. When we have fun, our guard is down and we're not taking ourselves too seriously. Connection refers to the feeling of having a special shared experience. And I do think it's possible in some circumstances to have fun alone and for this feeling of connection to be with yourself or the surroundings or the activity. But in the majority of stories that people tell me about their peak fun memories, another person is involved. And that's true even for introverts. And then flow is the state where we are so engaged and focused on whatever we're doing that we can even lose track of time. You can think about an active game, musician playing music. It's when we're in the zone. Now, it's possible to be in flow and not have fun, like if you're arguing, but you cannot have fun if you're not in flow. So playfulness, connection, and flow all feel great on their own. But when we experience all three at once, something magical happens. We have fun. And that doesn't just feel good. It is good for us. In fact, fun does so many amazingly good things for us that I personally believe that fun is not just the result of human thriving. It's a cause. So for example, fun is energizing. When people tell me their stories about fun, they glow. It is like a fire has been lit inside of them, and the energy and the warmth that they give off is contagious. You know, so much of life drains us, but fun fills us up. Fun also makes us present. A lot of us put a lot of work into trying to be more present. You know, we do yoga classes, we meditate, and that is all great. But the fact that fun is a flow state means that when we are having fun, we simply are present. There's no other way for it to happen. Fun also unites us. We live in a really polarized world, and as we all know, there's a lot of very serious problems. But when we have fun with people, we don't see them as different political parties or nationalities or religions. We connect with them as human beings. And it's worth noting that that is the first step in being able to work together to solve those problems. Fun also makes us healthier. Now, being lonely and stressed out, as many of us have been for the past 2 years, causes hormonal changes in our bodies that increase our risks for disease. But when we have fun, we're relaxed and we're more socially connected, both of which have the opposite effect. So, kind of blows my mind every time I think about it this way, but having fun is a health intervention. And then lastly, fun is joyful. You know, we all so desperately want to be happy. We read books about happiness, we download apps about happiness, but when we are in a moment of having fun, we are happy. So it makes me think that perhaps the secret to long-term happiness is just to have more everyday moments of fun. So how do we do that? How do we have more fun? Well, to start with, do not take the suggestions you will find in magazine articles about how to have more fun. So I looked up some of these myself, and I found suggestions that include, and I'm not making these up, roast a turkey. Put together an altar to loved ones who have passed. Watch a documentary about climate change. And my personal favorite, adorn your table with gourds. So those are not good suggestions. Instead, the most effective thing you can do to have more fun is to focus on its ingredients, by which I mean do everything you can to fill your life with more moments of playfulness, connection, and flow. So here are some ideas for how to do so. So to start with, reduce distractions in order to increase flow. Anything that distracts you is going to kick you out of flow and prevent you from having fun. And what's the number one source of distraction for most of us these days? Oh, thank you. was rhetorical, but yes, your phones. Now, I wrote a book called How to Break Up with Your Phone, so I have strong feelings about this, but I can guarantee you that you are not going to have fun if you are constantly on your phone. So today I want to challenge you to keep your phone out of your hand as much as possible so that you can take me up on my second suggestion, which is to increase connection by interacting more with other human beings in real life. Now, I know that one of the main reasons we're constantly on our phones is specifically to avoid having to spend time and interact with other human beings in real life. So I want to assure you that it is worth it, and it is not as hard as it might seem. So here's how you do it. You start by making eye contact with someone. Like, look them in the eye. Don't look like in the middle of their forehead where the camera would be on a Zoom call. All right? And you say hello. And if that goes well, you can introduce yourself. And if that goes well, maybe you can ask them a question, maybe something that's like thought-provoking but not overly personal or threatening. Something like, what's something that fascinates you? Or what's one thing that delighted you today? And you might be amazed by how good just one little moment of connection can make you feel. And if you do find someone to connect with, maybe ask them to join you in trying my third suggestion, which is to increase playfulness by finding opportunities to rebel. Now, I am not talking about James Dean-level rebellion. I'm talking about playful deviance. I'm talking about finding ways to break the rules of responsible adulthood and give yourself permission to get a kick out of your own life. So, for example, one person told me that some of the most fun she'd had in recent memory happened on a Friday morning when she and some of her friends ditched their work and their childcare responsibilities, tucked flasks into their purses, and snuck out to a 10:30 a.m. showing of the movie Bad Moms. So, lastly, here's one more thing that you can do today to start having more fun. I am just kidding. Prioritize it. That might sound totally obvious, but one of the main reasons we're not having enough fun is that we're not making it a priority. You know, our fun is always at the bottom of the list, and it can't speak up for itself. So I'm not suggesting that you like take out your calendar and make an entry that says from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, I shall have fun. That is a guaranteed way to not have fun. But if you know you consistently have fun when you spend time with a particular person, make a point to spend time with that person. If you know there's an activity that really does often generate playful connected flow for you, carve out time for it in your schedule. Treat fun as if it is important, because it is. I've been doing this myself for a couple of years now, and it's amazing to see how many areas of my life fun has touched. You know, I'm more creative and more productive. I'm more resilient. I laugh more. Making sure that I am having enough fun has made me a better partner and a better parent and a better friend. And it has convinced me of something that I very much hope I can convince you of as well, which is that my daughter was right. Fun is sunshine. It's a distillation of life's energy. And the more often we experience it, the more we will feel like we're actually alive. Thank you.
A TED Talk from Catherine Price from the TED 2022 conference, Why Having Fun is the Secret to a Healthier Life. Well, we wish you a fun Friday afternoon and a fun weekend, and certainly a healthy one at that. That wraps up this edition of the WHFR Journal. From the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn 89.3 online at WHFR.FM. I'm Alan Mazurek. Have a great weekend.
Time. That's where my baby stays.